Hi, Jo Marie Burke. Welcome to KABU.
Hi, Bill. Nice to be here with you today.
Jo Marie Burke is Associate Professor of Political Science at the Shire School of Policy and Government at George Mason University, a Senior Fellow at the Washington Office on Latin America. She lived in Peru during the very corrupt and murderous Alberto Fujimori years. She wrote the definitive book on the Fujimori regime. It's titled Political Violence and the Authoritarian State in Peru, Silencing Civil Society. She was an international trial observer to the criminal prosecution of Alberto Fujimori, who fathered Keiko Fujimori, who we will discuss today, as one of the candidates in Peru's recent election, an election that has enormous international importance. So, Jo Marie Burke, tell us about the recent election in Peru and the aftermath, and then we can discuss why the outcome of the struggle now is so important.
Thanks for having me on again, Bill. So it has been more than 1 month since the second round presidential vote in Peru, which took place on June 6th, pitting two candidates against each other. They couldn't be more different, perhaps. You have the hard right Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of, as you said, the former dictator of Peru, Alberto Fujimori, between 1990 and 2000, who is a staunch defender of free market neoliberal economics and sort of get tough policies on crime, drugs, all the maladies of our modern societies, versus Pedro Castillo, a virtual unknown, a rural school teacher from northern Peru, Cajamarca. He's a rondero, which is someone who participates in these local rural civil defense patrols because there's really been, for many decades, very little state presence. So communities have organized themselves to protect themselves from thieves and other, you know, social ills. And he's a trade unionist. He's been active in the Peru's largest trade union, the teachers union. And he briefly had a moment in the national spotlight in 2017 when he led a national teacher strike. But really, he's made no real forays into electoral politics. He sort of jumped right into the presidential first round election when there were 18 candidates, not very appealing. Castillo, who was the highest vote getter, only got 15%. Keiko Fujimori only got 10%. But that was enough to put them into the second round against each other. So in the end, after the vote took place, Pedro Castillo was he leads Keiko Fujimori by a very narrow margin, around 44,000 votes. But Keiko Fujimori has cried fraud, sort of stealing a page out of the Donald Trump playbook. She is claiming that there was fraud in these elections, systematic organized fraud, and she was demanding a recount of several tens of thousands of votes, mostly rural votes. She's basically trying to have votes for Pedro Castillo disqualified. So until all of these claims of fraud and the appeals have been exhausted, the elections authority cannot proclaim a winner. So literally, it's been over a month since the election and less than 3 weeks before the new president has to be sworn in on July 28th. So it's a very tense and uncertain moment in Peru. It has given rise to mass demonstrations on both sides. Pedro Castillo's voters have come out massively. In fact, many have traveled from remote rural areas to Lima to protect their vote, while members of Keiko Fujimori's party have also protested and demonstrated, claiming fraud, also claiming that they want their vote to be respected. So it's given rise to increasing tension, and there's a real threat of violence. There have been talks of military intervention. But yeah, it's a very, very tense moment.
My understanding is that Peru's conservative big media, not citing any evidence, nor checking with any of the election observers, Peru's national media vehemently supported Fujimori's claims. But the election observers, some of them with really good reputations, and some of the others whose reputations are not so good, they declared the election was clean and Castillo won a narrow victory.
Yes, there were both international and national election observers. There were something like 30 different observation missions across the country. Perhaps the most important one being the Organization of American States, which routinely conducts elections observations throughout the Americas. And they and the other elections observer missions have all declared that these were free, fair, and transparent elections. In fact, the United States State Department actually emitted a statement praising Peru for carrying out what they called model elections. And I think it's important to note that in 2000, when Alberto Fujimori was the end of his second term in office, and he was running for what was essentially a third but unconstitutional term in office, there were, in fact, mass allegations of systematic fraud. The Organization of American States, the OAS, was in Peru at that time, and they actually pulled their observers in the second, before the second round, or just after the second round vote, declaring that there had been fraudulent elections and that they did not recognize these as clean and fair elections. The United States government did the same, also declared that these were fraudulent elections. So Peru knows what fraudulent elections look like. And in fact, after Fujimori fled the country a few months after that, in November of 2000, and an interim democratic government was put in place, one of the first things that that government did was to rebuild Peru's elections institutions to ensure that such fraud could not happen again. And so as a result, Peru's elections authorities are actually among the most fair, clean, and transparent in the world. When Keiko Fujimori's teams of very expensive lawyers brought claim after claim of fraud, you know, for example, they claimed that the signature was not the same as the signature on the individual's official government document. Those hearings were streamed via, I guess, Zoom or whatever platform they use, but it was streamed online so you could actually sit in and watch as the elections authorities listen to both sides' claims of fraud, ballot by ballot. Very transparent process. So, yeah, your sense is right that the elections observations teams have all declared that this was a free and fair elections process, and there is no real evidence of fraud. One by one, the elections authorities reviewing the Fujimori team's claims of fraud have discarded them literally one by one. And they, at this point, only have a few remaining voting tallies to review. And they've stated that within the next week or so, they should be proclaiming Peru's next president, which will be Pedro Castillo, because there's not enough question votes to change the results. Again, the results are very narrow, 44,000 votes, very, very narrow. However, in a democratic process, it's 50% plus one.
What about the Peruvian army? Armies are often quite conservative, and power in the society resides in the capacity to control the military. What's happening with them? Are there struggles in the military between those who would prefer living in a sort of semi-democratic state with vast extremes of wealth, but them doing well, and those who want to squash the left completely?
Yeah. Before we get to the military and the church, maybe we could talk a little bit about how the Fujimori campaign, in close alliance with other right-wing parties and the mainstream media, launched a relentless red-baiting campaign against Pedro Castillo, who is, you know, a self-proclaimed Marxist. His political party, Peru Libre, has a fairly radical political program. They want to change the constitution, a constitution that was the result of a coup d'etat by Keiko Fujimori's father, tailored to his needs, enshrines neoliberal economics as sort of the status quo, and changing the economic policies to favor Peru's vast majority of the population who are poor. So there's just been a lot of red baiting, and the mainstream media has gone along with this. The mainstream media, I think it's important to say this, 80% of the media in Peru is controlled by one economic group, El Comercio. So it's virtually, it's almost a monopoly. It's an oligopoly, but it's virtually a monopoly. And so the mainstream media fell in line one by one behind Keiko Fujimori. They portrayed her in very positive terms. They gave her ample play on media. The pundits on the nightly news were overwhelmingly favorable to Keiko Fujimori and overwhelmingly critical of Pedro Castillo. And it's really only because there are a lot of independent digital-based reporters and platforms in Peru, like IDL Reporteros and Ojo and Convoca and so on, La Mula, that Peruvians were able to access more accurate coverage. But, you know, as we know, that media is not often accessible to people in, you know, far off remote rural areas where often there's not even electricity. But getting back to the armed forces question, certainly the armed forces in Peru, I imagine, are not very favorable upon the idea of a leftist Marxist candidate. The armed forces in Latin America are very anti-communist, very favorable towards the status quo. However, the recent history of the Peruvian military has to be taken into account. The Peruvian military were marshaled by Alberto Fujimori into performing the role of his political party during the entire 1990s. When Fujimori, Alberto Fujimori, I'm talking about Keiko Fujimori's father, when he was elected president in 1990, he had really no political party to draw upon to govern the country. And so he drew on the advice and connections of a retired army captain who'd actually been in prison for selling secrets to the CIA as his interlocutor with the Peruvian military. So the Peruvian military was thoroughly politicized during the Fujimori era and thoroughly corrupted. The Fujimori era was the most corrupt government in Peruvian history, and the Peruvian military fell victim to this. And as a result, there are dozens of senior military officials from the Peruvian era who either were in jail or are still in jail because of corruption. And so when Peru transited to democracy in 2000, there was an effort to reestablish civilian control over the military. And that's never really been, I actually should say established, because there's never really been strong civilian control over the Peruvian military. Even in the 80s, when Peru had, you know, a formal elected democracy, the military still was very, very powerful. However, I think a good signpost is what happened in Peru in September of 2020. There were some members of Congress, conservative members of Congress, some of them connected to very corrupt networks, who were trying to remove the standing president at the time. And one of those individuals, Manuel Merino, who was the president of Congress, actually began contacting members of the high commands of the armed forces, asking them to ally the army with the members of Congress who were trying to remove the standing president. And the army, first of all, ignored the overtures and reported them to the Minister of Defense, which is exactly what you want an armed forces in a democratic context to do. And then the Minister of Defense denounced this, and the government reaffirmed and rebuffed the overtures of Congressman Marino. So it remains an issue, but to date, the military remains firmly under civilian control. And my hope is that it remains such.
Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour, talking to Joe Marie Burt, who teaches politics and Latin American studies at George Mason University, co-director of the Center for Global Studies. We've been discussing the recent elections in Peru, where the right-wing candidate Keiko Fujimori is contesting the very narrow victory of a left reformist candidate. Keiko Fujimori adopted the Trump playbook of claiming fraud and whipping up her supporters, some of them top people in the military. Joe Marie Burt, it seems to me, the history of Latin American elections and politics can't be understood without considering the U.S. intervention into Latin American politics and even its elections under either Democratic or Republican presidents up to this day. Thus, in one of the latest and most terrible U.S. interventions in Latin America, Obama, his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and the national security apparatus, they gave the green light to the U.S.-trained and armed Honduran military to arrest and exile Honduras's democratically elected president, Manuel Zelaya. And then the Honduran military and death squads went on a killing and imprisoning spree, targeting labor union and environmental activists and leaders. I wonder, what's been the U.S. response? Trump, of course, warmly welcomed Keiko Fujimori to Washington. She was pictured all over the newspapers talking to Rudy Giuliani about crime and how to deal with crime. Keiko has all the authoritarian tendencies that Trump seems to delight in. But, of course, now we have a new regime. How are they dealing with the Peruvian election?
I don't think that the United States government, the Biden administration, any U.S. administration would feel terribly comfortable with the Pedro Castillo presidency. He's a known Marxist. His party's alliances have been historically with governments that we have troubled relationships with, particularly Venezuela and Bolivia. Under, you know, Chavez Maduro in Venezuela and Evo Morales, and now there's a new government under Arce in Bolivia. However, I think that the U.S. government's approach under Biden has been focusing on process. And I think that's extremely important because this same thing happened to Biden. Keiko Fujimori is trying to do in Peru what Donald Trump did in the United States in 2020, which is claim victory, claim that there was fraud, claim that she was the actual victor, and steal the elections from Pedro Castillo. She says he stole the elections from her, but in fact, she's trying to steal the elections from him. And the Biden administration, taking its cue from these other international observation and domestic observation missions, has very clearly stated that the election process in Peru is free and fair. They noted that they are also on the ground tracking what's happening, and they declared a model election process. So they're trying to hold the line on tactics by, you know, right-wing authoritarians like Keiko Fujimori, who through lies and mass media manipulation are trying to steal elections. And I think that is very important. Certainly the U.S. has a long history of intervention in the United States, and I don't by any means want to discount the importance of that legacy. But right now the U.S. is adopting the correct posture in Peru, which is Pedro Castillo was elected free and fair. We must respect those results. We will find a way to work with his government. And then we'll see what happens, right? I think that, but the importance of ensuring that the electoral process is respected seems to me to be first and foremost in the U.S.'s approach to Peru, and I think that's very positive. If Trump were the president, I have no doubt that it would be the exact opposite. I have no doubt that Trump would give full airing to Keiko Fujimori's lies of fraud and would actively be supporting her.
We've gotten to the final issue. I see this struggle in Peru as extremely important in international politics, and that if Keiko, in fact, somehow manipulates in one way or another her candidacy, she will, for one thing, free her father from prison, who was convicted of genocide, basically, lots of murders. But not only that, it would reinforce the authoritarian trends all over the world of authoritarian leaders taking over and they're refusing to leave office regardless. That's going to be a struggle, actually, for quite a while around the planet. Trump, in fact, could run for office, or a Trumpy could, and in fact, take power if the economy goes bad in the United States in the next 2 years. Certainly, they're planning on it. How do you see that struggle going on, and what can ordinary U.S. people do?
You know, Bill, I think that you're right. I think Peru is a bellwether. It's an indicator of future trends for Democrats around the world. Can a right-wing authoritarian leader perpetuate lies, manipulate the media to an extent that they can overturn or otherwise manipulate the results of an election, deny the winner his proper, you know, his assuming the presidency and herself take office? I think that if Keiko Fujimori's plan, and it's important to know she has multiple plans, there are multiple front lines on which she and her people are working to ensure that Pedro Castillo does not become president of Peru. If she triumphs in this effort, it will be a very troubling indicator for democracy around the world. Because what she is essentially doing is subverting the electoral process and Peru's very democracy. So if she succeeds, what it means is that authoritarianism will be installed in Peru, and other authoritarians, not only in Latin America but around the world, will learn from her and will pursue similar tactics to ensure their power in their own country. So I do think that what happens in Peru matters not only for millions of Peruvians. And I am hopeful, but we are seeing many examples of the resiliency of Peru's democratic institutions. It is my hope that they will succeed in defeating this authoritarian takeover attempt by Keiko Fujimori. But there are still concerns, I think, and it's important for us to continue to watch. You can contact your senators, your members of Congress, members of the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Committee issued a statement a week or so ago calling on Peru to uphold the election results and ensure a smooth transition, denouncing the election's, you know, fraud, the fraudulent claims of fraud by Keiko Fujimori and so forth. So we can play a role here in the United States by supporting democracy and calling on our representatives and our government to support democracy around the world.
Yes, for sure. No doubt phone calls succeed sometimes when our representatives and the government see it as possibly in their and the country's interests, and that the democratically elected leftist is flexible and ready to compromise and accept the political and economic constraints imposed by the U.S. and Western powers. But in cases where the Latin America country's leadership and the political movement they represent is serious about enforcing labor rights or raising taxes on corporate interests or, God forbid, nationalizing oil or the energy industry, that's another story. Keeping the U.S. corporate and political elite at bay stops them from deposing leaders and smashing movements they don't like by one means or another. That takes more than phone calls, but still phone calls can help when there's enough of them. So I often make my calls to our senators and representatives. Jo Marie Burt, thanks so much for talking to us. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Bill. It was a real pleasure being with you here today.